Hello, this is Melanie, and I'm reading articles from today's USA Today, Friday, April 26th, 2024. Starting with the money section under the money line column, three items. First one, Eras tour tickets cheaper internationally. Swifties who want to snag tickets to Taylor Swift's colossal Eras tour know the experience won't come cheap. This year, the billionaire will only visit three U.S. cities, Miami, New Orleans, and Indianapolis. For the October 18th show in Miami, cost of a single ticket ranged anywhere between $1,615 and $8,524 on StubHub.com as of Wednesday. So how else can fans see one of the world's biggest singers go abroad? In the past 30 days, searches for Taylor Swift Europe Tour 2024 tickets have increased by 300% in the U.S., indicating that some people are ready to take a long-haul flight, according to travel website Islands.com. Concertgoers who head to Europe for their Swift experience may actually save more money in the long run. Not only are ticket prices across the pond cheaper, but many European cities like Warsaw and Lisbon are also budget-friendly, offering inexpensive food and lodging. Second item, Tijuana Flats Tex-Mex closing 11 restaurants. Central Florida-based restaurant chain Tijuana Flats has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy and will be closing 11 of its restaurants, according to a release from the company. One location in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and 10 Florida locations were closed. In Tampa, Orlando, Jacksonville, and Boynton Beach, a Tijuana Flats spokesperson confirmed to USA Today that as of Monday, the fast casual Tex-Mex restaurant chain operates 65 locations throughout Florida, along with 26 franchised restaurants in Florida, Alabama, North Carolina, and Tennessee. And the last item in that column, Ford recalls over 450,000 vehicles for battery issues. Ford is recalling more than 450,000 vehicles in the U.S. because of an issue that could affect the battery, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration said in a notice published on Tuesday. The recall affects certain 2021 to 2024 Bronco Sports and 2022 to 2023 Maverick vehicles. The NHTSA notices say dealers will recalibrate the body control module and powertrain control module free of charge. Owner notification letters are expected to be mailed out May 13th. And yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial closed down 375 points to close at 38,085. New item. The U.S. economy's growth was slower than expected, despite Paul Davidson. The U.S. economy slowed more than expected early this year as weaker business stockpiling and exports offset solid consumer spending and a flurry of housing construction. The nation's gross domestic product, the value of all goods and services produced in the U.S., expanded at a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 1.6% in the January to March period. The Commerce Department said Thursday that's down from a robust growth of 4.1% in the second half of last year and the lowest reading since spring of 2022. It's also below the 2.5% gain projected by economists in a Bloomberg survey. But the pullback was caused chiefly by businesses that replenished their inventories more slowly and feeble report growth, two volatile categories that don't reflect the economy's fundamental health. Final sales to private domestic purchasers, which excludes those elements as well as government spending, grew a robust 6.1%. That illustrates that there is still a lot of positive underlying momentum, said Paul Ashworth, an economist with Capital Economics, wrote in a note to their clients. Since late 2022, the economy repeatedly has defied forecasts of a sharp pullback or a recession, shrugging off the Federal Reserve's aggressive interest rate hikes and the inflation spike those high rates aimed to tame. The disappointing growth last quarter could soften the views of Fed officials who say they're in no rush to cut rates following an acceleration in consumer prices in the first 3 months of the year. Yet any concerns about flagging growth could be blunted by the strength of the economy's pillars, consumer and business spending. As recently as late March, the Fed was still predicting 3 rate cuts in 2024. As annual inflation slowed from a 40-year high of 9.1% in mid-2022 to about 3%, according to the Consumer Price Index, or the CPI. But that was before the March Index report, released earlier this month, that revealed a third straight uptick in price gains, leaving inflation at 3.5%. That's well above the Fed's 2% goal. Some analysts believe Thursday's weaker-than-expected report signals the start of a broader slowdown in the economy. That trend, along with a resumption of a more rapid deceleration in inflation, could allow the Fed to plow ahead with multiple rate decreases, some forecasters are saying. Ian Shepherdson, chief economist of Pantheon Macroeconomics, acknowledged that last quarter's slowdown in growth can be traced largely to inventories and exports, but he added that consumption is also starting to wobble just a bit. Is consumer spending rising? Consumer spending, which makes up about 70% of economic activity, has underpinned buoyant growth. Consumption grew a solid 2.5% early this year, following a 3.3% gain in the fourth quarter. The rise, though, was driven by an increase in spending on health care and financial services. Purchases of goods, including cars and gasoline, declined. Shepherdson said the 2.5% increase in spending was less than the 3% economists expected and below the recent trend, heralding a sharper drop-off in the months ahead. Americans' ability to open their wallets in recent months has surprised some analysts because pandemic-related savings have largely run out, especially for low- and middle-income households. Credit card debt is at record levels, while delinquencies are historically high. But employers have added a booming average 276,000 jobs a month this year. While wage growth has moderated, average pay still rose 4.7% annually in March, according to the Atlanta Fed's wage tracker. That's giving many Americans the wherewithal to splurge, especially now that pay increases are outpacing inflation. Shepherdson, however, expects job growth to slow down significantly. It's a close call, but we still see a path to the first Fed rate cut in June. If payroll gains slow down substantially and inflation eases, he wrote in a note to their clients. Will the U.S. go into recession in 2024? Pessimists are becoming harder to find. Before Thursday's report, forecasters estimated the GDP would grow a solid 2.4% this year, and they figured the odds of recession had dropped to 30%, down from 60% last May, according to a survey by the Walters Kluwer Blue Chip Economic Advisors in early April. What is the market doing right now? Stock markets tumbled after the report. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 521 points during the midday trading, and the S&P 500 index fell nearly 1%. Besides reacting to the slower-than-expected growth, markets responded to the news that the Fed's preferred inflation measure ran hotter than anticipated in the first quarter, echoing the Consumer Price Index. The Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index rose 3.7% annualized, higher than the 3.4% expected that economists had forecast. That means Friday's personal consumption expenditures price index inflation report will show a faster than expected acceleration in prices for March. How other parts of the economy performed. Housing helps power the growth. Housing construction and renovation surged 13.9%, the most in 3 years and the third increase after 9 straight quarterly declines. Many homeowners aren't selling their houses because they don't want to be hit with a much higher mortgage rate for their new home. That's causing a dire shortage of existing homes on the market and prodding builders to put up more single-family houses. Housing construction also has been juiced up by the prospect of Fed rate cuts this year, which led to a decline in 30-year mortgage rates from about 8% last fall to 6.6% earlier this year. Recently, though, mortgage rates have topped 7% as resurgent inflation has sparked forecasts of few rate cuts. Business investment grows. Business investment grew 2.9% after rising 3.7% the prior quarter. Outlays for computers, delivery trucks, factory machines, and other equipment rose a modest 2.1% as companies faced higher borrowing costs. Spending on buildings, oil rigs, and other structures dipped 0.1%. Business stockpiling sputters. Businesses added to their inventories more slowly or drew them down after replenishing them briskly the previous quarter, reducing growth by 0.35%. Such stockpiling has been volatile and doesn't typically reflect the economy's underlying health. Companies heavily stocked up in 2021 in response to supply chain snarls and product shortages, leading to big swings in the past couple of years. Government outlays rose 1.2%, down from 4.6% the previous quarter, and the weakest showing in nearly 2 years. State and local purchases had been bolstered amid a wave of infrastructure and clean energy projects spurred by sweeping federal legislation. But revenue has declined in recent quarters as economic growth has gradually slowed after a post-pandemic surge and the federal government's pandemic-related aid to state and local governments has been running out. And speaking of homes, this is a new item, homes near top schools are costly. Those in the best districts, 86% higher than average. This by Medora Lee. The high cost of education begins long before kids start college, a new study shows. When parents look for a home to set down roots, they often seek the best public school districts. Those homes tend to cost more, nearly $300,000 more on average, according to children's equipment manufacturer Chico, which analyzed Zillow home values with niche's rankings of best school districts across the U.S. The average U.S. home value is $353,748, while the average for the best district in every state is 86% higher at $651,662, the study showed. It's interesting how strong the correlation between home values and school ratings is across the country, said Kyle Bierlein, who works as a research assistant with digital marketing firm GoFish on behalf of Chico. The significant increase is found from coast to coast. States with the highest premiums to live near a top school. The top five states with the steepest premiums to live in their top school districts, according to Chico, are Texas. You'll have to pay 486% more to live in the Eanes Independent School District in Austin. The average Texas home gets around $293,824, but homes in the Eanes District, Eanes, on average are $1,721,835. And then you got to pay to go to that great school. Missouri, Ladue School District in St. Louis commands a 346% increase from the state average of $234,000 to $1,047,000. Connecticut Westport School District homes go for about $1,630,823, 332% more than the state average of $377,000. California Palo Alto Unified School District gets a 308% premium. The state's overall average home value is $743,000, but buying into that coveted school district might cost you $3,030,000. And lastly, Ohio. Parents must pay a 198% premium to access the Indian Hill Exempted Village School District in Cincinnati. An average Ohio home is valued at $213,000, but buyers looking to live near the top school district will pay about $635,000 for a home in that district. Which obtains a higher premium, elementary or high schools? Homes near the top-rated elementary schools cost 65% more than a state's average home, while homes near the top-rated high schools cost about 45% more. So on average, it costs a bit more to live near a given state's top-rated elementary school than it does to live near its top-rated high school, Bierlein said. States with the highest premiums for elementary schools. The states where you pay the biggest premium to live near the best elementary schools, Connecticut, Massachusetts, in Connecticut, to live near the state's premier elementary school in New Canaan, you pay 359% more for your home. The state average home price is about $377,000. But if you want to live near the best school, you're going to pay closer to $1,352,000. In Massachusetts, while homes in the state cost around $585,000 on average, that skyrockets to $2,033,000, the highest in the study, when you get near the top-rated elementary school in Weston, Massachusetts. That's a 247% premium. In Tennessee, the average home is valued at around $305,000, but if you want to live near or in Brentwood near the top elementary school, the price for a home is $1,054,000. The states with the steepest premium for high school is Kansas and Delaware. Can I get near a great school without paying so much? Yes, there are a handful of states where you can pay less than the state's average home price to get near the state's best schools. For the best school district in New Mexico and Maine, you can pay 46 and 44% less. In places like Maine and New Mexico, the top-rated school districts are further away from larger metropolitan areas, which could be one reason why home values are lower there than the state's average. For the best elementary school, North Carolina gives you the biggest discount, 58% less than the average home. Oklahoma and Florida round out the top three at 36 and 28% less. In many states, the best high schools and elementary schools are located within the best school districts, but that isn't always the case and could be another contributing factor as to why some states actually experience lower home values near their top-rated elementary or high schools, Bierlein said. Well, that's all there was in the money section. Now for some news in the lifetime section. Under the Lifeline column, Making Waves, Amanda Seales discusses Ray, R-A-E, Issa Rae. Amanda Seales is opening up about her relationship with former co-star Issa Rae. Seales, who starred with Rae on the HBO dramedy called Insecure, addressed the rumored feud between the actresses during an appearance on the Club Shay Shay podcast released Wednesday. "She wasn't empowering to me," Seals said. "She didn't feel like I deserved to be protected. I'm only giving a portion of the situation, but that was my experience, and nonetheless, I have still always protected her because I felt like it was my responsibility to do so. But it's not." And who's having a birthday today? Channing Tatum, the actor, is 44, and Carol Burnett, long-standing actor and actress and comedian, is 91. And now some news from inside the paper. Nursing home staffing gap is wider in the South. Few states meet the new minimums, but some are much worse than others. This by Jamie Fraser. Nearly all nursing homes in America will have to hire more nurses and aides under a new rule released this week that mandates a minimum level of staffing, although the gap is significantly wider in many southern states. Just 160 skilled nursing facilities out of roughly 14,500 that received federal payments for care met the new requirements every day last summer, according to the most recent daily time card data available to the public and analyzed by USA Today. Most nursing homes met core components of the new rule on only 3 days out of the 92 in the quarter. About half the time, facilities had enough people to provide each resident at least 0.55 hours of care from a registered nurse each day, as the new rules require. About 1 day each week, the facilities could provide each resident 2 3/4 hours of care from a certified nursing assistant, a CNA or an aide, which they must do every day under the new rules. In addition, nursing homes have to provide a total of at least 3 3/4 hours per resident of daily nurse and aide staffing, as well as have a registered nurse on site 24/7. The USA Today analysis found that many facilities comply with some components of the rule at least part of the time, but it's rare for them to consistently meet all the minimums. It was more common for nursing homes to have enough registered nurses, with most meeting the minimum about half the time. It was less common for facilities to have enough aides on duty, with most only having enough CNAs about 1/3 of the time. That's certified nurses. The rules will be phased in over 3 years. The regulation also allows an exemption to the rules for facilities that can prove they are located in an area with a shortage of health care workers and have made a good faith effort to hire more nurses and aides. Why is it important to have enough nurses and aides? For decades, academic research has shown that staffing levels reliably predict the quality of care in nursing homes and that shortages increase the risk of delayed response to daily needs, like toileting and eating, as well as medical emergencies such as falls and strokes. A pivotal federal study from 20 years ago, when most nursing home residents were younger and healthier than today, suggested a minimum of 4.1 hours per resident each day, more than the new rule. These are the first nationwide minimum staffing rules with numeric benchmarks, which supporters have said will make it easier to track and enforce. Regulations have long required, and still do, that skilled nursing facilities have enough nurses and aides with the correct training to meet the needs of every resident's care plan. Some people require more care from a registered nurse for complex medical conditions. Others need more assistance from an aide with daily tasks like getting out of bed or eating. A previous USA Today investigation found, however, that the rule was rarely enforced. Service Employees International Union, or the SEIU, a union representing many healthcare professions, had advocated for the new staffing minimums as crucial to reducing burnout and turnover among nurses and aides, in addition to the benefits for the residents they serve. The new rule could result in nursing homes hiring more than 200,000 additional care workers, if they can find them. which states have the biggest gap in nursing home staffing. It's more common in several southern states for skilled nursing facilities to operate with fewer nurses and aides than the new rule would require. In Louisiana, nursing homes had, on average, the total minimum staffing on just 3 out of 92 days in the summer quarter last year. The next lowest were Texas with 4 days, Oklahoma with 8, Tennessee had 8, and Georgia had 9. Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Texas had the biggest gap to fill on registered nurse staffing, meeting the new requirement on 6 days, 14 days, and 16 days out of 92. In addition to Puerto Rico, Guam, and Washington, D.C., 3 states on average had facilities meeting the new standard at least 75 days in the quarter. Alaska had 90 days, Hawaii 88, Utah 79, Maine 76, and Delaware 75. Many southern states also fared poorly when comparing current staffing of aides to the new requirements. Out of 92 days, facilities met the CNA requirement on 11 days in Texas, 15 in Tennessee, and 16 days in Virginia. On the flip side, facilities on average met the requirement on 89 days in Alaska, 81 in Oregon, and 72 days in North Dakota. New item, and this has been in the news in the last few days. Crime on U.S. college campuses is trending up. Some parents are hiring security force for patrol. This by Suhail Bahat and Zachary Shamali. As students returned to college campuses across the U.S., so did campus crime, data shows, alarming some parents so much that they hired their own security people. They raised more than $40,000 to hire private security at the University of California at Berkeley, much to the chagrin of campus administrators. Half a dozen unarmed guards patrolled the campus for more than 2 weeks in March, according to Sagar Jathani, a father of 2 Berkeley sophomores involved in the effort. A month after Jathani dropped off his kids for their freshman year in October 2022, there was a fatal shooting near their dorm. "This was a real rude awakening," he told USA Today. Jathani and other parents were concerned that crime across the city of Berkeley seemed to be on the rise. A February shooting scared some parents, too. No one was injured, and a suspect was reportedly taken into custody. Hiring private security officers didn't sit well with the Berkeley administrators. In a statement to USA Today, spokesperson Janet Gilmore said money intended to keep Berkeley students safe would best be spent supporting the school's police force. Hiring private security raises a number of concerns, including the training and experience of individuals hired by such firms, Gilmore said. Campus crime rebounds to pre-pandemic levels. The number of crimes reported by college campuses across the country rebounded to pre-pandemic levels in 2022, government data shows. Crime reported from nearly 6,000 institutions rose about 8% from 2019, even though enrollments dipped during that time frame. The jump in offenses between 2019 and 2022 coincided with students' post-pandemic return en masse to the campuses. Compared with year-to-year changes before 2019, the recent jump represents the largest increase since post-secondary institutions that receive federal funding began reporting campus safety statistics. Experts see little reason to worry and say the numbers are largely consistent with what colleges have been experiencing since 2013, according to Daniel Carter, president of the consulting firm Safety Advisors for Educational Campuses. Well, that's all that we have time for today, for this week, actually. Thanks again for listening.